And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU-FM. And we are here with Ihab Lotaieff. And Ihab is a Montreal-based engineer, writer, and activist. He served on the Coordination Committee of the Coalition for Justice and Peace in Palestine, as well as the board of the Canadian Arab Federation and Parole Arab, and other groups as well. And since the Israeli invasion of Gaza in December of 2008 and January of 2009, he has visited Gaza twice, once accompanying a Canadian delegation of parliamentarians, and was a key organizer of the Gaza Freedom March in December 2009. So, Ihab, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
It really is a pleasure. I saw you in all places, the National Post, just today or a day or so ago. There you were. You had a headline. There's a photo of you. And it was actually part of some wonderful news, right? I heard that the Canadian boat to Gaza has raised $100,000. Is that true? Because that puts us at one-third of the total, I think.
That is precise. That is one third of the total. It makes us very happy and very proud. And it also reminds us that it's still only one third, and we still need all the support and all the funds we can still get to reach our target, which, by the way, we have no doubt that, God willing, we will achieve.
Well, at this rate, it looks like that might actually happen. I know the United States has had a bit of an easier time of it, being a larger country. They can mobilize funds a bit more quickly. Do you know where they're at roughly in terms of their boat?
Yes, I do, actually. They are getting close to 300,000. Their target is 370,000. When I was chatting with some of the organizers in the United States and the American or the U.S. boat to Gaza, I was saying that in relativity, we are at about a million right now, because they are 10 times our size. So
proportionally, we've done very well. Canadians have come out to this, and it looks like we've put in a good effort, good participation. I know that's it's a fairly big figure for activist grassroots fundraising campaign. I was a bit shocked when I heard Sandra Roosh put out the $300,000 number when she first announced $300,000. But I figured it was such a big task and a big goal that people would be motivated and inspired by it. And that turned out to be the case. We already have $100,000 of that, as we see. Now, one of the things that's been brought up in discussion is that, it looks like the committee is going to purchase a boat. I guess renting a boat is difficult because it could be seized. Is that how it works?
That is totally correct. I mean, it's not only our Canadian project that is buying a boat. All from the very beginning of starting the idea of breaking the siege to Gaza by sea, the first group that started the Free Gaza in 2008, they did realize very clearly that they will have to buy a boat. Nobody would lease you or rent you a boat. No, at least no businessman in his right mind would to take to Gaza with all the dangers and the news and the expectations that Israel might damage it or confiscate it or whatever option they resort to. So, yes, we do have to buy about all international campaigns are buying their own boats. And it's a part of the challenge, unfortunately.
On that challenge, I know you've commented on this a little bit. It seems that our government's approach is different even than that of other governments. I think it was put forward to Lawrence Cannon, our foreign minister, what would happen if a Canadian boat to Gaza was seized, for example. Would the Canadian government come to the defense of a Canadian boat? And the foreign minister, he said that the government in Canada would want to follow the rules set by Israel and not international laws of the sea. Is that the policy they're adopting?
Well, we have seen over the past 4 years since the Conservative government was elected a position of supporting and defending what Israel does, right or wrong, and never criticizing anything that Israel does by the Canadian government. We have also seen that they follow a strong defense of Israel's logic. Whatever is said by Israel is echoed many times by the Canadian government. So let's say, number one, we did not expect much different from them. Number two, we're still putting them in front of their moral responsibility towards the Canadian people and Canadian activists that are spending so much time, effort, and the hundreds and maybe probably thousands of people that are putting their money into this project, that they should do their best to defend us, rather than say that we should follow the rules Israel is setting, which are the exact thing we are standing up against, we are objecting to. So a part of what we're doing is exposing the Canadian government's position in front of the Canadian people on this unacceptable way of dealing with things and this unacceptable support of Israel, right or wrong, that the Canadian government is following.
Yes, it seems this one-sided support of Israel has had some negative effects. I know that, I think it might have been Galloway or someone else has described the Canadian government as essentially a bunch of Bush-era holdouts when we talk about Harper and the Conservatives. And whether or not that's the case, certainly our international standing appears to have plummeted. I mean, there was the recent failure to win a seat in the United Nations Security Council. Are these things possibly connected to foreign policy decisions the government takes?
I think a part of it is surely connected. I think a part of it, if you look at the United Nations Security Council membership vote, you would realize that there was a strong bloc that voted against Canada, did not vote with Canada. It includes a lot of the Arab and Muslim countries that by tradition understand more and are more connected to the Palestinian cause or Palestinian Israeli conflict. That's one thing, but I think there is another thing that's even more important than just the specifics of the Palestinian conflict, is the Canada as a reasonable, as a just, as a mature voice on the international arena. Even if some people consider our peacekeeping role a perception and hasn't been that powerful, at least not in the last decade or a couple of decades, there is a lot of international belief that Canada was that. And now it's gone. It's gone. A part of it is due to our position regarding the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, but a part of it is as well regarding us not taking, us as a country here, as a government, not taking brave and balanced stands regarding many conflicts in the world. We're always very conservative, very right-wing in the causes and the things we support on the international arena, and that loses us credibility and loses us the possibility, as it's always reported, we have never lost a vote for a United Nations Security Council seat before, and here we are losing it now. What does that mean? It can't be just brushed off simply.
Well, certainly if our government takes an outspoken conservative stance, at least the Canadian people as a whole, or Canadian citizens, seem to be really increasingly involved in these sort of campaigns. I know in terms of the Gaza fundraising, I was present at that boat fundraiser they had in Toronto, the Sunset Cruise. It was very nice. We got there a bit early. It was evening, and there was a lineup for that. And actually, it was oversold. There was basically the purpose of the whole event was to have a boat to raise money in Toronto for a Canadian boat to Gaza. So it was like a theme event. We were on a boat, and it was a sunset cruise. So it was a good idea, and it turns out more people wanted to be a part of that and donate and be part of a fundraiser than they could actually fit on the boat. So unfortunately, some people had to be turned away, but they're going to have other chances to get involved. And the sunset cruise is very nice music. We heard from Kevin Nish. He phoned in. He was, one of the Canadian Gaza Freedom Flotilla survivors. So that was very exciting, and I'm just wondering, have there been any other major fundraising events, or is there anything planned?
Well, there was a major fundraising event in Vancouver that took place just this last week with Malala Yousafzai, the Afghani outspoken politician and activist. There are others in the making. Hopefully we'll have something here in Montreal that's going to be quite big in the month of November. We still are ironing out the details. But also we are depending in our fundraising strategies on another type of fundraising, which is a more quiet fundraising, targeting people who can provide larger sums of money as a one-time contribution without going through the load of organizing big fundraising events and the logistics needed for that and the expenses needed for that as well. So everything has its role. Events like that bring one-time large sums of money to the fundraising effort, but also bring publicity and bring awareness. At the same time, the other types of fundraising that we're following are more low-key, but maybe on an individual level, bring more money out of the individuals who are able to pay more sums of money than a ticket or a contribution fundraising event.
Well, this is all very impressive. It's a national event, so it's Canada-wide coordinated. I know that the Canada Boat Gaza website has, Montreal organizers, Vancouver, Toronto, et cetera. So, there's a lot of thinking and planning going into this, and I like the way you've opened it up to a lot of different options for ways people can involve themselves. itself. I guess given that it's a national effort and it's a campaign that's going to be stretching out for several months, can you tell me what kind of support you're getting? Is there organizations signing up locally and regionally or across the country, something like that?
Well, when we started thinking, a group of, let's say, 20 activists, we were all affiliated with one organization or the other, and we discussed whether we want to start the Canadian Boat to Gaza as an official coalition of organizations, or we want to start it as a group of activists with the indirect support of organizations. And we chose the latter because it gives us more freedom of movement, and it gives us more ability to be our own project and not be carrying any positions or statements or burdens, maybe in some cases, that our previous organizations or organizations we are affiliated with might bring to the table. So we did that, and it proved very, very successful, because all the organizations that any of us is affiliated with have put the endorsement to the project, have contributed whatever they can, and we still expect more contributions from them. So you can see on our website there is at least an endorsement of, it's over 100 organizations now. Again, I repeat, and I'm very proud, we are all very proud, that it's from coast to coast. It's not concentrated, and again, it's something I say jokingly with our American sister project, that their concentration of support is New York, Washington, and California. We are far wider support than that. We are existing in all cities, and even the couple of cities that we are not present strongly in, we do coordinate with. And Kevin Nish, you mentioned Kevin, he is doing a tour for, as a Canadian Boat to Gaza organizer, going through even cities where we don't have people who are on the committees living in, like Calgary, like Yellowknife. So it's going to be very, very interesting.
I guess, as you say, it's a national effort, and people are contributing across the country. So that is impressive. And the other thing that strikes me is it's discussed in reference to flotilla, not just the previous Gaza Freedom Flotilla, but the idea that there should be or maybe another one. And I have heard that there's going to be a second Gaza Flotilla, or Gaza Flotilla number 2, and that should be in spring of 2011. Now, I guess, I don't know if the Canadian boat is going to be sailing with them, but is the plan basically to sail together with other boats?
Yes, we are a part of the organizing for Freedom Flotilla 2 with the Europeans, Greek, Swiss, Swedish, French, Italian, and with the United States group as well. There was a meeting in Geneva this 10 days ago, where the decision was made that the flotilla, there was intention, at least for some of the groups, to sail in before the end, and we too, actually, to sail before the end of this year, before the end of 2010. And we were hoping to be able to do it, even though we are only at one-third of our target fundraising at this point. But the meeting resulted in a consensus that let's wait for those who can't make it. Let everybody sail together in a larger flotilla than the previous one, and have both a bigger number of boats and a larger number of international campaigns sailing together at the same time. And the target was shifted to spring of 2011, and hopefully we will be a part of that flotilla.
Well, yes, some of this is unprecedented. A Canadian boat to Gaza, there could be a United States boat to Gaza. Other boats have been sailing from areas where boats were not coming from before. So it has been taking off, and that's a success. I guess if people are going to be contributing to this, donating to this, they might have a couple questions. I guess one of them, if it's a Canadian boat, you know, we're going to fundraise for it. There's going to be $300,000 or more put into the boat. How many people do you think you might be able to send on that boat?
Well, it's a delicate balance, actually, between cargo space and passenger space, and that's something that we have been, you know, studying, and the opinions are still going this way and that way. And also, if we don't meet our full target, or if we go above our target, and the boat price is not always directly proportional to the number of passengers, So making a long story short, I know I've put too many variables on the table. It can be anywhere between 20 and 50 passengers. And that will have to be decided while the purchasing process is done for a boat that would be good enough, sturdy enough to do the trip without problems, but at the same time fit the largest number of passengers on it. That said, there is also another important thing we're putting in front of our eyes as a part of our strategy, is that we hope, and we're going to try our best, not to have a boat of activists only, not to have a boat of journalists only. We want to have something that is split roughly one-third, one-third, one-third. Activists and organizers would constitute one-third. Known Canadian personalities, union leaders, politicians, ex-politicians, etc., would constitute one-third, and journalists from both the mainstream and the alternative media would constitute the last third.
I see. You've got a plan there, and you seem to have a finite or fairly clearly defined range of people, 25, 40, 50 people. Again, Canada is a very multicultural country, and there's a lot of people that would be interested in the campaign, journalists, activists, other people, so we want to represent that. I can see the logic there. I guess one of the other things in relation to that is you mentioned the cargo, and there's the fundraising for the money for the boat itself. Are you fundraising for cargo money, or are you going to take cargo via donation?
Actually, both. We have already been approached by some medical aid organizations that they're willing to, outside of our fundraising effort, to supply medical supplies for the boat. We also have been allocating or planned from the beginning to allocate a part of our fundraising to buy specifically medical supplies, specifically medicines that we have. We actually already have a specific request coming from Gaza itself for what they need. So that is the vision at this point. And this type of cargo as well has to do with the logistical planning, where it's not the type of cargo that would take a huge, huge space versus its value. So that would fit well with a smaller boat in this scenario.
Oh, okay, I see. Makes sense. Well, I guess my final question to you would just be, I guess, in terms of people donating, it looks like the boat is feasible. It looks like we can get a boat from Canada and fill it with cargo and people and send it perhaps as part of a flotilla. If that's not possible in some way, and it looks like it should be, but if people are donating that gets blocked or held up, what you will have the funds. Will you be able to use those funds, transfer them to Gaza, or use them to continue the fundraising or donation campaign?
And that's a very valid question, and it's not a defeatist question or anything. We look at these things very pragmatically and very positively. There can be a few reasons why we cannot have a Canadian boat. One of them is that we don't reach the target where we can finance a boat on our own, even the smallest feasible boat. And although that's, as you said, I really believe that that's not likely at this point, but if we get to that case, we will open extend our hands to other campaigns, other international campaigns that might be in the same situation and have a Canadian-Irish boat or whatever. I mean, I'm just giving the example of another country that I know are not very advanced in their fundraising efforts. That would be the first idea to have. There is a second idea where if we have more or less the money, but for some reason it proves for a long time impossible to go that trip, in case of hostilities, in case of Israel becoming more aggressive towards the actions, we don't want to endanger the lives of anybody. There might be an international decision to change tactics. In that case, we will join other international tactics that would ensure both things, actually, because our goal, as I mentioned, is not only to get the aid to Gaza, but also to get the attention to the plight of the people of Gaza. So we will choose based on the most feasible alternative that would get those two goals achieved. In the third case scenario, which is far-fetched at this point, if Israel removes its embargo, and there's no more need for breaking the siege that way. Well, the Gaza Strip is badly damaged and badly destroyed, and they can use every cent to build the damage that Israel has done to Gaza over the years of attacks and embargo. So that would be a very good use of the money. But I must add here a reminder that the people of Gaza had told me one time after the other when I visited that their worst nightmare is that they live day and day after day under the threat that Israel can do anything. So lifting the embargo might not mean much because Israel can do the blockade again the next day using any excuse or any reason. So there is a very big danger here that we have to be alert and not be fooled by Israeli tactics that might be just that, tactics to divert international attention. So we're looking at the bigger picture, and we are hoping to do whatever we are doing to the best interest of the people of Gaza and the long-term support and aid of the Palestinian cause in general. Let's not forget that the situation in Gaza, the problem in Gaza, is but a recent problem compared to the 60-plus years suffering of the Palestinian people. And only when that is resolved will there be a real resolution to the Middle East conflict and a real end to this struggle and suffering that people are living in and have been living in. The suffering did not start with the blockade of Gaza and will not end with the end of the blockade of Gaza. This said, one other thing comes to my mind about our work as well, related to what the people of Gaza saying, that they don't want to be living also under the mercy of international aid. They want to be able to do trade. And, you know, Gaza proved very successful over the years of the Oslo false, I would say, peace agreement, where they managed to establish great export industry and trade with Europe in particular. And thus, one of the things we want to do when we reach Gaza is carry with us from Gaza, even though symbolic, produce from Gaza, embroideries, potteries, whatever industries they are still sustaining till today, even under the blockade, carry them out with us to ensure the right or to assert the right of the people of Gaza to do trade with the rest of the world, which is really what they want to do. They don't want just aid.
Yes, it seems that they don't want to live on handouts. They want integrity. They want independence. They want an economy that's viable that they can work in. And so, yeah, I think lifting the blockade, lifting the siege, and bringing attention to this issue is one way to really help that kind of independence. So you're very familiar with the issue, and it looks like the Canada Boat to Gaza Committee has investigated a lot of the possibilities and what can be done. So it looks to me like there's no reason not to help and contribute and donate money to this campaign. So I want to thank you very much just for telling us about that today. We can get involved here in Hamilton, and in the next few weeks, we'll be looking as to how we can do that. And I wanted to thank you for raising those issues and just giving us all those details.
And Kevin Nish will be in Hamilton as well, by the way, early in November. So I hope your listeners would go and listen to his talk about his previous experience and probably also about the catching up with what's happening with the Canadian Boat to Gaza. And before I leave you, I'd like to give your listeners the website of our project.
Of course.
Which is very, very easy, handy, Canada Boat Gaza, one word, canadaboatgaza.org.
So that's canadaboatgaza.org.
That's right.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Ihab.
Thank you very much for having me.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.